Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Dan Quinn speaks in 1 hour. 3:30 press conference for the head coach today. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. Danny, Ian Rappaport moments ago, NFL media, saying that the Daniels MRI revealed a sprained knee. He says it's not a long-term injury, but Daniels' status this week against the Raiders is in doubt. This meshes with exactly what I've heard, which was to say, we had just teased going to break. We're going to talk about this coming back. And we didn't know, obviously, this report would break during this time. But what I've heard all along was it would be surprising if he played. I think when you're dealing with a guy that's his age and that was able to recover as quickly as he did last year and play through the broken rib that he did,
right,
they're not just going to rule him out outright and say there's no way that we know, you know, on a Friday, Saturday after an MRI, he's definitely not going to be ready the following week. But if you're going to be a little bit conservative with him, or if you're going to not let him play unless he's 100%, it is unlikely based on, I'll use the word, severity of, or just how banged up the knee is, that he was going to be ready to be himself. So I haven't gone hard in the paint to say he's not going to play, but everything that I've heard from multiple people has been they've got a plan for him, and that barring a real surprise, it was unlikely that he was going to be able to get back on the field against the Raiders, which would set up a game for Marcus Mariota to start against the last team he started for.
Yeah, his former team. What I never understood was the casual confidence from so many that everything was fine and he'll be okay and it's all good. And you know, this is both a relief that it's not something more serious, but also concerning that it's going to affect him in some way, right? And now we're kind of doing this dance. But the casual confidence I heard from, you know, whether I'm listening to different shows or fans or the Twitterati or everything else, that, yeah, you know, he's okay. It's nothing. And he was going to play this weekend. There was this assumption, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing, hearing, and consuming, because we did last year where he had a broken rib or ribs. They wouldn't admit it. He's getting wrapped up like a mummy between every possession, and there's never an admission that everything was fine. So to me, and I'm not faulting them, by the way, I'm not criticizing anybody, simply saying, if that's how you're going to be in terms of keeping things tight-lipped, close to the vest, et cetera, I don't do what you say at face value anymore, right? You're not in the business. You've made it clear with your mission. You have no interest in letting me know and letting the public know what's going on intimately with injuries, and you're doing whatever the rule is, et cetera. You're not going to offer any excuses. You've made it very clear that you don't care that we are in the circle of trust and we know the deal. So what I'm going to do from now on is not believe you when you tell me everything's fine, or you know, sort of keep digging when you let me know that he'll be fine, or you know, whatever the statements happen to be. So I was confused by the people that just sort of assumed that he would be good to go this weekend. But back to this. Again, I'm grateful it's not something more serious, because when you hear knee, automatically that's one of those touch points or clutch points of somebody's body where something's going on there. You start thinking about surgeries. You start thinking about longer recoveries, et cetera. So again, sprained knee is good. What's bad is it's going to affect him. And I'm very, very hopeful that they are smarter than, frankly, I thought they were last year.
So I want to get into that, first of all. This idea of protecting him from himself, not allowing him to just go out and play through pain. Knee, very different than a rib. The comparisons, obviously, that everyone's going to make unfairly to the team that I covered with the Shanahans. With the number 2 overall pick, who was dealing with a knee that he'd injured and tried to play through it and then ended up shredding the knee, right? Which is, again, not a fair comparison or reasonable one, but That's what life is. Life is about living through things and then having that affect how you view things moving forward. So I think anyone trying to shout people down or get angry at people who live through that are being foolish and irresponsible. Like, of course, when you've seen a player try to play through a knee injury who runs around as a dual threat, and you live through the greatest rug being pulled out from underneath of you all time, it's going to affect the way you view something like this. But I do want to say as well, it seems to me like what's coming out, I have to imagine it's from the agent side. I don't think the team, which has decided not to put this out all along, would start leaking things today. Now, to be clear, when they leak things, it's going to be the national media. I don't know why, but they just don't. This group in general, I would say, is not a big fan of leaking things locally, from what I can gather, but that's a whole other point. I think, though, this is the agent, and I think that the team is waiting for Dan Quinn to speak at 3:30, and that's, they're big on messaging. They're big on everyone being on the same page. Uh-huh. They're going to have a meeting. Here, how are we going to say this? How are we going to couch this? How are we going to do this? Everyone will beat by that drum. They've been incredible in that way.
Uh-huh.
So why wait until an hour before he speaks to then send this to Shefty and Rap Sheet? I think this is probably more the agent side kind of getting their part of it out, especially when you see some of the things about, hey, not serious, not long-term, all that stuff. I'm not convinced, based on everything I've heard, that he's just going to be back at practice, like first thing next week either. I think there's a chance that this could be a couple of week thing. Not to say that I would expect him to miss the Atlanta game, because remember, it was a Thursday game,
yep,
not a Sunday game. So you might actually, even if it's a 2-week-ish recovery, which is kind of what I'd heard, you might still be able to come back and play in that game. But all I'm saying is, I think we've got to wait and see. If you hear anything definitive, like he's definitely going to be out at 2 or 3 games, I think that person is being too aggressive in their timeline of getting that out there. And if you hear the opposite with the team right now, or the agent, where they come out and say, hey, he's not going to miss any time, that's probably too extreme the other way. Because again, you just don't know yet. You got to see, how does he respond? When does the swelling go down? The swelling was substantial from what I'd heard, right? So this was, but that was why we put it out there on Friday. Everyone was like, oh, well, an MRI, so what? Players get MRIs. The point wasn't just that it was an MRI. It was an MRI and some concern about the results and what that would mean. So Could he play against the Raiders? Yeah, because I said all that last season leading up to the broken rib game against the Bears, he probably wasn't going to play in that game. Didn't really practice, and they let him play anyway. I just think this is different. This is a knee. This is a guy that runs around. This is a guy that takes shots. I would not allow him to play unless he is absolutely 100%, and I'm not sure that that's realistic.
Yeah, and there is a difference. I mean, having broken my ribs, it's excruciating and awful and the worst thing ever in terms of pain or whatever, but that's a pain management thing, right? These guys go through so much, it's incredible. You put your flak jacket on, you take your ridiculous painkiller type shot, and you just sort of hope you don't get hit the wrong way, right? It's hard to breathe, it's hard to do anything, but with a knee, one of those like pressure-bearing load spots where your entire athletic being, start, stop, jump, squat, run, stop running, throw, plant. If you don't have it, you don't have it. And it's a waste of time. You know what I mean? Like, the thing we learn, you reference Robert Griffin. To me, it's impossible not to evoke some of those memories and lessons learned, or what should have been learned, was there is a chasm, a Grand Canyon-style ravine between the word cleared and he's good to go. Cleared means he's not any danger of re-aggravating or making it worse just by living and breathing and playing football.
Yeah.
The good to go means you can't do what you do. And when you can't do what you do, for my money, you are more at risk. If you can't make the shimmy, if you can't make the Chris Cooley jelly leg, you can't do the push-off, you can't do the directional change with the same explosiveness, you can't protect yourself the right way. You can't do the things that make you you, so I need to be cautious. Now, this is NFC Championship Sunday. Let's figure it out. If this is, you know, the most meaningful game you got, they're all important because this is, you know, whatever it is, 6, 7, 8, 9, whatever percent of your schedule, these next couple of games might be almost 20%. You need this player to be on the football field for as long as possible, but you also need him for years, not for a rush back for a week so you can beat Atlanta. So we have to have long-term thinking here. I'm hoping they're more judicious maybe than they were last year. He probably should have sat one of those games, to be honest with you. I don't know which one, when the rib injury was at its worst, but to me there was a kind of you know, a time where he clearly was not himself and something should have happened.
Compromised.
Yeah.
He did not play at the same level and it wasn't particularly close. And in fact, he wasn't able to be Jaden Daniels, nor we always talked about when he would leave the pocket and run and he would just kind of like turtle and fall over. You knew, forget the fact that he's getting heating pads put on him on the bench or he's getting wrapped up like a mummy, you know, and everyone's like, oh, it's fine. It's normal. That's just normal stuff.
Yeah, not normal at all.
I've never seen that for a guy that's healthy, but whatever. But remember, there were a couple plays against the Eagles and I think one other game where like he left the pocket and he just literally kind of turtled and protected himself.
Yeah.
Not him, but he was compromised and he played anyway. And to their credit, to his credit, they got through it. He was able to throw the Hail Mary and beat the Bears, even though a couple of his rough performances like that Road Eagles game were in that stretch. I just think overall, if not for those four games, let's say he misses two or three of those, then we look back at last year, and without those numbers, he played at an MVP level for essentially the entire time he was out on the field. You saw that, and you're like, oh, have they solved it? Is this the cliff? What? No. He just wasn't 100%. But they didn't necessarily tell him you can't do it because it's a rib. And quarterbacks play through ribs all the time.
Yeah.
You pad it up. You're going to take some shots. It's a threshold thing. I think a knee is a different story.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan.
But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You can get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Jay Gruden will join us every single Monday, all season long at 5 p.m., and he's on the Rude guest hotline.
On air and on the road, Jay Gruden is driven by the Ted Britt Automotive Group, Ted Britt Ford in Chantilly and Fairfax, your F-150 HQ, Ted Britt Lincoln in Chantilly, and Ted Britt Chevrolet in Sterling, all home to Ted Britt for Life. Lifetime vehicle coverage, see and shop them all at TedBritt.com.
So, Jay, let's start with the news of the day. A sprained knee for Jaden Daniels. Status for Sunday against the Raiders in doubt. When you hear sprained knee for a quarterback who's a dual threat and runs around, what do you think?
Any injury for Jaden Daniels is concerning, without a doubt. You know, he's what makes that team tick. And, you know, without him, it's going to be a struggle. But hopefully sprained knees are not anything serious. Hopefully it's a week or two, or maybe he can play and deal with it. But I don't know the severity of it. Nobody really does with a strained knee. It's hard for me to imagine the time frame. Well, he'll be back to 100% and what he needs to do to be great on the field.
Jay, what factors would go into your decision-making as to when to play him?
I guess you got to see him run. You know what I mean? You got to see him burst off that leg, and I got to make sure that's 100%. I don't want to risk further damage. If the trainer says he can go and there's no risk of further damage, obviously there's always a risk, but you know what I'm saying? If he tackled, and then I'd let him play, but I'm not letting him play until he's back to 100%. I can see him running that 4.3 40 that he can run.
So he came up lame, so to speak, on a couple different plays. He grabs at his knee after he kind of landed on his head, getting, you know, turned upside down, like cleat overhead at the 30-yard line, and then there was another play later in the game. But he finished. I know a lot of people have talked about that he stayed out there and he finished. And I've just always said that's not that indicative of, like, timelines and how serious something is, because you got the adrenaline and the swelling hasn't happened yet and all that. What's your experience on that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, you can get through a game a lot of times, and then when you have that next day where you wake up, get out of bed, you can hardly walk. You know, I've had that with my shoulders before. I've had that with my knees before, and it's pretty painful. You know, it's just a matter of he's got the extra couple days, which is good, to get a lot of treatment. He's got to be in and out of that hot tub and getting his massages and what he needs to have done to try to get that thing ready. I don't think there's a 100% chance that he's out, but I think that if he can manage it and he can still run, I think he can still play with a sprained knee.
What level of nervousness would you operate with, or just how cautious would you be as it pertains to two things? One, the fact that he is a running quarterback, that's part of the superpower, right? He was, you know, a 900-yard guy or 800-yard guy as a rookie, that he had 70 rushing yards in his first game. And then secondly, just the fact that it's week three of this 18-week marathon, like, would you just say, hey, come on, man, give us 1 week here, let's rest up, it's just, you know, one game, and we'll get you back out there? Or if he was a pocket passer, do you view it any differently? Because he's not taking the same shots and running around as much. How do you kind of balance all that?
Yeah, with the protection the way it is right now, he is taking the shots in the pocket. That's the issue that I have. And the lack of running game is apparent right now, where they're becoming one-dimensional. Now, if they're going to hand the ball off and do some quick game and keep him in the pocket, get the ball out of his hands, then, yeah, I think he can go ahead and play. And I would eliminate the quarterback design runs. Let him scramble up the middle here and there and slide for a couple yards for maybe a first down. Sure, I think he can do that. But they have to really figure out a way to get this running game going for him to play again, so he can take some pressure off of him, where it's not the quarterback design run, it's not the scramble, it's not to keep him in plays alive, where he can throw some balls on rhythm, hand the ball off, get some play actions, get him outside the pocket a little bit, then he can function. But he can't function if they play like they played against Green Bay, or one-dimensional, having to throw within the pocket all the time.
Yeah, and Jay Gruden with us here on G&E. What did you make of that game? We haven't talked to you since then. Just about that. How much of that is Green Bay's great defense, great plan, great execution, et cetera, and how much is, you know, maybe what Washington's not doing?
Yeah, I think Green Bay's got a good defense. They shut down Detroit, and they played great against Washington. You saw what Detroit did against Chicago this week. They scored 52, so I think a lot of credit has to go to Green Bay. And then, you know, there's just a lot of concerns with the offensive line that I have right now. But I don't think they're gelling right now. I don't think the left guard, left tackle play well together. The right tackle's struggling mightily. Connolly's he's not ready. I mean, they need to help him out a lot. So, yeah, I have concerns with the offensive line. Getting holes for the running game, that's not happening. Protecting the quarterback, that's not happening. So they got some issues to figure out up front. They got to get gelling together and play a little more physical.
You said Connolly's not ready in your mind. Do you still like him as a prospect, and how would you handle that spot?
Any big guys that can move their feet like he can is a good prospect to have. You know, it's just a matter if he switched from left tackle to right tackle, and that takes some time. You know, he's just not a real physical guy right now. He's got to play more with his legs, and we use some power every now and then. He's catching everybody, and they're pushing him back a lot, and he's not getting any movement in the running game. So he's got a lot of work to do. I mean, he's a good prospect for sure, but I just don't know if he's ready to be thrown into the fire against these players. He's playing against Micah Parsons. He's playing, you know, next week will be – who's it going to be next week?
They Max play the Crosby.
Yeah, this got no chance. So need some help. I don't know what to do, what the answer is, but he is a good prospect. He's just not playing very good up to his potential right now. He's a rookie, for God's sakes.
Would you consider starting Andrew Wiley over him against Crosby and just giving him a reset?
Yeah, 100%. I'd have to concern that. After watching the film of the first 2 weeks, you know, I'm sure the offensive line coaches grade him, and I'm sure everybody in the building wanted to draft him. They drafted him the first round. They want to try to make it work, but at some point, Andrew Wiley played pretty good last year at right tackle, I thought. You know, and they went to the NFC Championship game, for God's sakes, with him at right tackle. So I would not hesitate to put him in there at right tackle, let Connerly be the backup swing tackle for a few weeks and see what happens, and just give him time to get better.
He's allowed an NFL high 11 pressures through two games, by the way, Jay. 9 in the last game.
That's probably being generous. There's been others where the defensive end is right in Jaden's face where he can't throw too. So it's tough, man. It's a tough position. He's played against very good defenses. We'll give him that, but that's too many. And then you're playing against Max Crosby. We got to get Wiley out there. Got to get more experience this week and get him ready for maybe mid-season run, because you know tackles get injured. I know that firsthand. So he's going to have to be used quite often as the season goes on. Just not yet.
Jay, how would you handle that Thursday into then this sort of mini, it's not a bye week, but it's a little bit of a break into this next game, rough one for everybody Thursday. We got a bunch of injuries sort of piling up here. How would you handle kind of that mini break and then sort of getting after it? Almost like, do you burn the film, or, you know, how do you view that? And how would you handle that as a coach getting ready for this next one?
No, I think you have a lot of time to really self-scout and see what you've been doing good, bad in the first 2 weeks, especially up front. We got to figure this thing out up front. We got to figure out how we're blocking on these double teams and these pulling plays and all that stuff, and the back blocks and the pass protections, the running backs stepping up in holes. You know, a couple times I saw the running backs cut linebackers in the hole, and the linebackers jumping over and almost killing Jaden. I mean, you can't cut a linebacker in a hole on a blitz. It drives me nuts. So they got to fix a lot of things from a technique standpoint, and then schematically, Cliff's got to come up some things to get some guys open, especially on third down. Can't just run hitches out there and slant it to Lane, who's not a big receiver, and can expect Jaden to find completion. So they got to find good matchups offensively, fix their protection, their running game combinations, and they'll be fine. I mean, it takes some time. They had a short week. They only had 3 days to get ready for one of the best defenses in football, so we'll give them a pass on that one. But now they have an extra time to get their team ready to play a pretty tough Raider team who's going to come off a short week a little bit.
Jay, we had a caller about 20 minutes ago asking about Terry McLaurin's slow start and if it's relevant that he didn't participate for a month leading up to the season. And while it'd be easy to say yes, I mean, he is, through two games, been more productive than he was in the first two games last year. So the slow start thing for him is not necessarily new. But what are you seeing when you watch him?
Well, we had the same discussion last year. Everybody's ready to give up on the guy, and he came on like gangbusters and made huge play after huge play. So I think it's a matter of, trying to get him some matchups that he can win instead of leaving him on the same side of the field all the time, and some formations to get him some relief from time to time. That'll help a lot. And I think Cliff did that last year. Got him some screens, got him some balls out in space where he can catch and run. And then, you know, take some shots with him. Everybody's well aware that Terry McLaurin can run by us, so they're giving him some cushion. And on third and five, they're sitting on him a little bit. So we got to find the happy medium to try to get him the ball somehow. And then Debo's got to make some plays. And the third, fourth, or fifth receiver, I don't know who that is right now. I'm not a big Luke McCaffrey, Noah Brown guy. He had four or five targets and had one catch. Lane is not quite ready yet. So they got to find that other weapon as well to go along with those two guys, especially at the receiver position.
How much will they miss Austin Ekeler?
They'll miss him. You know, they're going to put a lot on this rookie's plate, you know, and Rodriguez got to get back in there. I think they need Rodriguez in there a little bit more for the in-between-the-tackle tough yardage. I'm not sure Krosky Merritt's ready for that pounding in there. I think they need to do it by committee. And those two or three backs that they have right now, I think they can manage it. I don't anticipate one guy doing it, but Eckler's missed, especially with what he does in the passing game. I don't know who that's going to be in the passing game to take over for Ekeler.
Maybe McNichols got the shot to do it last year. They also signed Chase Edmonds, who was with Cliff Kingsbury in Arizona, so maybe he gets an opportunity. Flip into the defensive side of the ball. Jay Gruden is with us. Weekly Monday appointment after Commanders games, after watching all the tape, to break it down with us on Grant and Danny. Jay, Marshawn Lattimore had a rough go of it. I thought week one was a lot better than what last year looked like, but he did get penalized three times in that game. Another couple of penalties in this game already, now five on the season, four that were accepted. What did you make of his performance?
Yeah, I thought the defense in general struggled a little bit, without a doubt. I think Sainistrobe missed a couple things. I think Harris missed a few things. You know, the touchdown pass to the tight end, I think that was Harris. He had to get back there with the tight end. You know, it's a combination. The interior defensive lineman didn't do very good against Josh Jacobs in that running game. They pushed him around quite a bit. So there's a lot of issues to be had. I don't think defensively you could say, well, you know, it was all on Marshawn Lattimore, was all on the secondary, was all on the defensive line. It was a combination. Sometimes the defensive line played good in their gaps, and sometimes the DBs didn't play well or tackle well. So a lot of issues right now they got to fix up. They got to fix up and get the right combinations out there. They got to gel together as a unit and not try to, you know, mix and match too many personnel changes out there. Sometimes I don't even know who's out there at safety. So they got to find the right guys and just play harder, play better, tackle better. Quit giving up the 95-yard drives. Green Bay had two of them.
Yeah, Jay, it feels like, you know, just thinking of a couple samples, that Matt LaFleur has gotten the better of Dan Quinn and his defenses over the years. Did you have anybody like that where, you know, just for whatever reason, scheme, design, et cetera, you just had their number?
I would like to play against the Ryan brothers anytime. You know, when we gutted them, and when I was at Cincinnati, we got Rex pretty good when he was with the Jets. But I just had success with them for some reason. They're great defensive coaches, that's for sure. But But yeah, no, it's just a lot of it's personnel related, really. You know, you want to get after the corners and the secondary and the way they're playing their coverages. You have coverage beaters for that, but you got to be able to protect them. That's the issue right now, the Washington. I think Cliff knows how to get after defenses, but right now they're not doing a good enough job of protecting Jaden to try to get second and third level type throws behind the defense.
John Bates has become such an important player for them. And I'll tip my cap to you on this. A few years ago when you were coming on with us, you were basically crushing the fact that they just didn't have any tight ends that could block. And he's come on after they drafted him like gangbusters to take that role. He's become really good. He's got a hurt groin. We don't know about his availability this weekend yet. But, man, did they struggle when they couldn't keep him in because he wasn't in the game to help out Connerly. Like, if he's not out there, how different will things look for them? And how, if you don't have a, you know, that blocking tight end, how much could that change how you call things if you're Cliff?
It changes a lot. You got to have help out there, and maybe it's going to be Ben. I guess it'll have to be Ben. But somebody's got to get out there and help him out. Zach's going to have to step up and put his chin strap on and his mouthpiece in this game. He's got to have to be more physical and help out Connerly. And maybe they bring in, maybe they use Connerly as the extra tackle like Detroit has done, like a lot of teams have done. They play Wiley and then play Connerly as the extra tackle to try to get more beef up there, especially on the right side, on Max Crosby's side. There are certain things you can do to try to negate Max Crosby. It's easier said than done, but they're going to have to do something creative to help the right tackle, whoever it is.
Let me go flip side, a little more positive here, Jay. Are there any players that you've gone, man, I'm actually pretty impressed with that guy through just a couple of games here?
With the Commanders right now?
Yeah, with Washington, yeah.
Not really. Not on offense really right now. Nobody that is unexpected. You know, Jaden and Debo, and you're expecting Terry to have some big plays. Nothing's really happened offensively, exciting-wise. I guess Krosky Merritt has done some pretty good things at running back, who I really didn't know a whole lot about. He's been impressive a little bit, but the left side of the line hasn't been very good. Center's been excellent still. Right side line's been average. Tight end play hasn't really been very existent. Zach Ertz had a couple hits, but he's got to get some more juice and some big playability. Hopefully Terry McLaurin can do that and some more creativity on offense, and I think they'll be fine.
Circle back to Jaden Daniels real quick with Jay Gruden, then we'll hit a couple NFL things before we let you go. On Jaden, what would he have to do on the practice field for you to give him a go? You mentioned like wanting to see him sprint. As the thing you actually want to see with your eyes.
Yeah, change of direction. You know, his change of direction is so unique and unbelievably effective, his ability to make people miss in the pocket, outside the pocket. So I want to see him change direction, really. Maybe have him do a short shuttle like a whole combine. I want to see you change direction, man. I got to make sure you can stick your foot in the ground and let it rip. That's one. Number two, I got to see you step up in the pocket. Three, I got to see you avoid contact, to get outside the pocket, move side to side. That's what you got to see a quarterback do.
Could you play him if he was just like limited Friday with nothing else? Like no, never a full practice?
Depending on, you know, how much I felt good about Marcus Mariota. If I felt good about Mariota taking over, which he played pretty well when he played last year, maybe I count on Marcus. But if Jaden can sit back there and throw the ball 7-on-7, do some things in the play action game and still hand the ball off from under center, do some things, then – and he, you know, it's up to Jaden and the trainers for me. I would always leave it up to the quarterback, number one, and then number two, the trainers. And if they both gave me the thumbs up, then I'm going to play him. If not, then I'm not going to make a decision to sit him because I'm worried about him getting hurt when the trainers tell me he's okay and the quarterback tells me he's okay. So it's up to the quarterback and it's up to the trainers for me.
Go around the league with you a little bit here, Jay. The Colts 2-0. Daniel Jones has looked pretty good. It seems like Shane Steichen finally found somebody that can run his offense the way he wants.
Yeah, they haven't punted yet either. That's pretty amazing. So yeah, I think they have a lot of good weapons, and they're utilizing Jonathan Taylor, and they got this tight end, Tyler Warren. I don't know how he's a second tight end picked in the draft. I have no idea how that happened. But yeah, they have some weapons, and they're really calling a good game. Their defense is doing well, and Daniel's protecting the football, not turning the ball over. So that's a good recipe. They got a huge break in that game against Denver with the elevating call and the field goal, the stupidest call ever. But they're playing well.
Yeah, I hate that rule, and I hate the call more than the rule. Warren, by the way, 80 yards receiving yesterday. I'm guessing you mean that he should have been the first tight end drafted, is what you were saying.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah, I don't know how you can say, I'm going to let this 6'6" big son of a gun go and take this other guy. But anyway, we'll never know. We'll see how Loveland does here, but he's had 2 catches for 5 yards. I know because he's on my fantasy team.
Colston Loveland to the Bears, oof. Yeah. Went first. What about Falcons, Vikings? That was the Sunday night game last night. Couple of the sophomore quarterbacks who haven't played a lot. Michael Penix, J.J. McCarthy. It was not pretty under center for either guy really last evening. What'd you make out of their performances?
Yeah, you know, J.J. struggled mightily his first game, first three quarters, and then lit it up against the Bears in the fourth quarter, and came back and went, and everybody's happy. And then this game, he kind of took another step back. You know, I think with J.J., they're going to have to count on a really, really strong running game, just like he did at Michigan, and then a couple play actions and some dropbacks to try to get Justin Jefferson the ball. So they just got to figure out what their identity is. It's very hard to say, okay, let's hand the ball off when we have Justin Jefferson out there and Adam Thielen and Hockenson, you know, and they're blocking. You're like, hey, we can't have these guys block all day, but they're going to have to figure out a way to pound the ball between the tackles and then get J.J. on some play action passes to make it a little bit easier for them.
What do you make of Kansas City's 0-2 start?
Played two really good teams. I know that, you know, and so I think they'll be okay. They've struggled with, you know, ever since they lost Tyreek with the weapons, and they don't have anybody that scares you at all on offense. The running game's not very good. Obviously the speed outside is very average, and Patrick's having to do it all by moving around in the pocket and buying time and making ad lib plays. And that can run out pretty quick. You know, it's very tough to do that on a consistent basis. They just got to find some rhythm, timing type throws, move the chains, keep their defense fresh, because they still have a pretty good defense.
Hey, you called it with Russ Wilson. You said the tape suggested he didn't play that badly, and basically that the offense around him was an issue, and it wasn't like it was just operator error. He throws for 450 and 3 yesterday against the Cowboys, and I guess won't hear any calls for his job this week.
Well, he had two horrible plays in overtime. You know, the ball that he tried to pull back and it went backwards, and they had to punt the first time. They had a chance to just kick a field goal and beat him, and then the second thing, he threw a horrible interception, which enabled the Cowboys to come down and win that football game. But he did play well up until that point. Malik Nabers is unbelievable, and that's kind of what you expect from the Giant offense. But, you know, the Cowboy defense, we know they were 30th last year, and they're probably going to be 30th again this year. They didn't do anything to address it, really, and they lost their best player. So I expect when the Commanders play the Cowboys, I expect there to be fireworks to be had.
Who do you like tonight between Tampa and Houston?
Man, that's a tough one. I'm probably going to take Houston, just because I know how loud it is there. You know, when I was with the Bengals, we played them in the playoffs 2 years in a row. I couldn't hear myself think for a month. It is so loud there, and I think that'll have an impact. I mean, I really like Houston's defense. I think they'll get after Baker and do enough offensively to get a few points. I don't expect a lot of points, but I expect Houston to get it done.
Jay, Mac Jones gets a start for Kyle Shanahan yesterday, who it was rumored was going to take him at number 3 overall before they went Trey Lance, which obviously backfired. But Jones throws for 283 touchdowns, no picks. Not a bad first start for him outside of New England and Jacksonville getting an opportunity. What'd you think?
Yeah, played good. You know, New Orleans isn't very good, but he did a good job. And Kyle does a good job with the quarterbacks. And that's something you have to do with the young quarterback. And you have to really protect him with the running game, with McCaffrey and the play actions. And guys can manage that, man. If you don't get stuck in third and long all day and you're playing with the lead, you can control the quarterback and how you can protect him as a play caller. And that's what Kyle Shanahan specializes in. Now, he struggles when he gets into known passing situations like every other coach for the most part. But he does a good job with quarterbacks when he's first, second down.
Hey, did you hear the story that Shedeur Sanders told the Ravens in the fifth round he didn't want them to draft him?
I heard that.
What do you make of that?
I don't know why. I think it's the idiotic thing to do, really. I think it should be a privilege to play behind Lamar Jackson and learn from Lamar Jackson. You know, Lamar's had a little bit of an injury history himself, and be able to put as a backup to Lamar Jackson and learn from Lamar would be awesome, you know, for a couple of years. When you're going in the fifth round, you're not expecting to get the starting role from day one of training camp. You know what I mean? Sixth round, you're going to probably have to earn it through injury or earn it through the course of a year, maybe 2 years. I don't know why you think you have the right to say no to any team that wants to draft you.
I got this weird email from these odds makers, and it said that someone in your family is the odds on favorite to be the head coach at UCLA next. What do you think?
UCLA?
UCLA.
I don't think there's any chance in hell that happens.
This
God.
John
I don't
Gruden
think they have any
to UCLA.
NIL money either.
You don't like the fit there?
You don't think so?
Only if they have a crazy ton of money to pay their players. If not, he ain't going there. I mean, this is all about the money in a college football right now. If you don't have a big bankroll, you ain't going to win. You're not going to get any players. Well, but Clemson's struggling right now. They got a ton of money. So you never know. I don't know what he's going to do. John loves a coach, and he's probably going to get in it somehow, some way. I know he wants to get back in the NFL, but I don't know if that's going to happen or not. But if a college team comes a call and they got some money, then he'll probably go.
UCLA, I would think, has a plenty of money, don't they? Why wouldn't they have cash?
They lost to UNLV and who else last week?
Oh, they're terrible.
Yeah, they're awful.
But Deshaun, I mean, I don't know if you've seen any of Deshaun Foster's press conferences. I think John might be a slight upgrade on the sideline if it worked out.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going on there, but it's hard to take over a team that's that loses the UNLV by 20. But yeah, you never know. With the NIL the way it is, you go right to the portal, you get well quick, right? You find yourself a quarterback for $5, $6, $7, $8 million, get yourself some big linemen, a couple of guys that can rush the passer, and who knows?
Well, to that
John
point,
could do it.
So, like, I have a buddy who's constantly texting me, and the same email you're referencing, by the way, Danny, with, like, email, it's the odds, rather, of, like, who should be hired at these places. For Virginia Tech, the big thing is everybody wants Michael Vick to be the head coach. And this is what people used to do, like, 15 years ago. It would drive me crazy. They'd call in, and they'd be like, fire everyone and hire Brian Mitchell to you know, as the coach on kick returns, and hire Santana Moss at wide receiver and Ryan Kerrigan at defensive end. But now it's happening. Like, you see DeSean Jackson is a head coach. Michael Vick is a head coach. It's like none of these guys have coaching experience, but what I gather is they're smart football guys, I think. But the gist is, like, it's the Deion thing of, like, they are the face of the program. You recruit people that want to come play for Deion Sanders or whatever, and it's kind of a portal play in a sense. So I don't know if Michael Vick's a real candidate for Virginia Tech or not. I'm kind of old-fashioned in the way of, like, wanting to hire people that have coached before to be my head coach, a big-time program. But this is, like, the way of the world, to your point. It's wild.
Yeah. I don't know what to make of it anymore. I know that Virginia Tech lost to Old Dominion. They were 28-0 at one time, so maybe Michael Vick would be a fit. Maybe D'Angelo Hall. How about that?
I like D'Angelo has coaching experience, so he doesn't even fit the mantra here.
I'd rather have D'Angelo. Well, Michael Vick's getting some experience now, so who knows? He might be a great coach. And, you know, a lot of it depends, too, who you're going to hire on your staff. You know, a lot of people think that I'm going to hire this young ex-player, but who's going to be his line coach? Who's going to be his D-line coach, his secondary, D-coordinator? There's a lot of issues you have to, you know, who's going to help them pick players, you know? So it's not just about the head coach nowadays. It's more, actually, probably more about the recruiting process in the portal.
Jay, awesome catch up with you as always, buddy. We'll talk next week.
You got it. Thank you, guys.
Be good, man. There's Jay Gruden.
On Air and On the Rope, Jay Gruden is driven by the Ted Britt Automotive Group, Ted Britt Ford and Chantilly in Fairfax, your F-150 HQ, Ted Britt Lincoln and Chantilly, and Ted Britt Chevrolet and Sterling, all home to Ted Britt for life, lifetime vehicle coverage. See and shop them all at TedBritt.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan. But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You can get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
I don't have any animus or jealousy of teams getting new stadiums anymore. Because I'm getting a new stadium.
Yay, Dad!
I'm getting a stadium. We're getting a stadium. Danny's getting a stadium. Darius is getting a stadium. It's so easy.
Stadium boy!
Everyone can do it.
It's such a simple process. It just takes the will to do it. And a little debating, and we get the best deal for everyone.
All you need is a little want to. couple of bucks.
Midnight hour Hail Marys from two branches of Congress that don't see eye to eye on anything. Next thing you know, you got a stadium deal.
Big thanks to all the D.C. City Council members except Brianna Nadeau and Robert White, who sat in that chair right there and told us, there's a deal I'll support. Well, it wasn't the one that ended up getting passed, I'll tell you that much. But 11 D.C. City Council members said, yeah, we should be able to have Taylor Swift in Washington, D.C. Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous that we can't host World Cup games in the nation's capital. Yeah, it's pretty odd that we don't have a stadium to house and home and host major events in the nation's capital, the most powerful city in the world. There will be a stadium in Washington, D.C. Danny, congratulations.
Congrats to you, buddy.
On all your hard work.
Yeah, seriously. I should probably take some credit.
We did it.
Yeah, we did it together.
As a radio show.
Yeah, all we did, we were just like, hey, we don't quite understand what's happening. Could you please get guys either do it or don't or whatever? But yeah, it's a long, drawn-out, complicated process, as you see. Nowhere is it more complicated than here. You know why. I mean, it's the folding layers of government, right? The local meets the national. Then there's like the park services in there for a reason. And then there's like two dudes that are from this other branch. And then all of a sudden, all the lobbying efforts. Everyone's headquartered here, so everyone's got a voice. Everyone's pulling it in a different direction for their own agenda, etc. Whereas in like Kansas City, it's like, hey, the team's great. We got Pat Mahomes. We have a stadium. They're like, yeah. Same thing in Buffalo. They're like, yeah, this is like, we don't have much. The anchor bar is still here, and we have no commerce, and everybody's kind of leaving. We have the Bills, right? Yes. And they just do it.
I'm in a great mood today. First and foremost, I got to watch some hockey today. I was over at Kettler. At Capitals day one of training camp, caught up with our guy Nick Dowd, spent some time with John Carlson and Pierre-Luc Dubois and the boys. Caps are getting ready to get back to action with preseason games coming up. The NHL campaign kicks off at Capital One Arena in just a couple of weeks, Danny. We're your flagship home for Capitals hockey, 106.7 The Fan, so I'm excited about that.
I was just going to say, that feels so early to me. Like, it doesn't feel like that's where we are in the calendar.
Well, it's every year. That's what happens.
No, I'm aware.
Week or two in October, I'm the aware. Caps start playing hockey.
I get it.
We should do the Danny thing where you start the show every day going, can you believe it's already this time of the year?
That's what happens when you turn a certain age.
Yeah. You know how many days we are from Christmas, by the way? I think it's like 98 days away.
I was going to say 90-something.
We're under 100.
Yeah.
Countdown is on. You won't every day start the show by going, can you believe? Here's your weather report, but also how far into the year we are.
It seems like I just got used to writing 2025 on my checks.
So that was fun. Also, I got that feeling where you've accomplished something. I don't think it's going to work because nothing is easy. But I've sent off a bunch of paperwork and went and took pictures at random gas stations and done all kinds of nonsense.
You on a scavenger hunt over there? What are you doing?
Might as well have been. Trying to get a passport.
Oh, good luck.
I thought I would be covering the NLCS for MLB Network Radio. It looks like I'm going to be covering the ALCS. I don't know what you know about the American League, but the Toronto Blue Jays are whooping everybody's ass.
I said, look at the standings. You got the Yankees, Boston, no problem. Detroit, Cleveland is frisky. They're in it. Houston, Seattle. What's the issue? Toronto.
North of the border, my friend.
Toronto.
At Real ID doesn't get you into Toronto.
Best record in the old American League.
They're pretty good. So just to cover our bases in case the Blue Jays can win a division series. Had to get the old passport taken care of. But yeah, we've been moving and shaking today. There's been a lot going on. But I am excited for everybody who has been looking forward to the possibility of a day that Washington football came home. I got scolded yesterday for saying the Commanders came home. Because apparently the Commanders can't come home. Ugh. They were never here before. Whatever makes you happy, everybody. Can we just celebrate that the football team's going to play their home games in D.C.?
No, I'd rather point out a clerical error with a lot of all caps and exclamation points. That's more fun.
This will not be perfect. I need everyone to understand this. The fact that there's no tailgating is a bummer for me. It's going to be super expensive. There's going to be PSLs. Like, you get a new stadium, sometimes you buy a new car. Danny, you got a nice new whip. Payments probably aren't that fun.
Yeah, it costs money.
You know what I'm saying?
It costs money to do that.
That's what happens. But there's going to be a stadium in D.C., and here's the difference for me. We get a seat at the table for anything and everything. You want to host the Super Bowl? It's going to happen. You want to host the Women's World Cup games? That's going to take place. When the United States of America men's national soccer team is hosting World Cup and games are being played all over the country. They're not skipping D.C. because they go, yeah, we don't trust Northwest Stadium to house 60,000 people for the day. So thanks, but no thanks. Those days are over. We now, correctly, as the number 8 media market in the United States of America, will be able to host anything we want to, because we will have a beautiful Taj Mahal, incredible state-of-the-art, immaculate facility to do so. And frankly, anything other than having that possibility, whether you want, you should not host things because you go, now we're busier, now we're not interesting. Because you can't.
You should not be turned down.
Beyonce telling you no can't happen anymore. And everyone, until that was not the case, should have said, okay, how do we fix that? And luckily, 11 of the D.C. City Council members decided that they're going to fix that. And so we move forward. But again, a hearty congratulations. And thank you to Josh Harris and Mitch Rales and Mark Ein and the ownership group and the people like Mark Klaus that worked their butts off to make this happen.
Think about that for a quick second. And listen, it's their job to do those things, and they're not in it for altruistic purposes. They're going to make money, and rightfully so.
To some extent, these guys are. I think Mitch Rales, who went to games with his dad and looks at, you know, owning a team in some way as a like fiduciary responsibility.
Public trust type thing. Yeah,
I guess, think it means a lot to his legacy that he gets to say, I brought the team back.
No, I think that's fair. I guess I just mean they're not running a nonprofit. You know what I mean? They're not doing a 501 C3.
No, there's some dollar bills in this exchange.
They'll do just fine here. But the reason I bring that up is they're pretty much in the last, what was it? Was it 23 that they finally took over ownership when the wholesale was final? So in the last 2 years, they're basically spending around $10 billion for two main things, two pretty big properties, two pretty big entities, the team and then the place they're going to play. It's a pretty big ask. It's a lot of capital up front. It's a lot of borrowing. It's a lot of expenditures. So to your point, again, they are not running a charity. The new stuff, there's going to be some sticker shock. There's going to be some, whoa, wait a minute. They're going to have to make that money back somehow. Because again, you overlay that much, and they will in the long term, and it'll take, you know, 10, 12, 15, 20 years to pay everything off. And when you operate in the billion sphere, you can deal with some short-term losses, right? I mean, that's just kind of what you have to do. But there's going to be a lot of stuff around there, and a lot of things are going to cost a lot. And it's not going to be the way that we're used to doing it, right? Where RFK was X, Nubs Field was Y. That is not going to exist. This is the new way of doing stadiums where the centerpiece is the stadium, and everything else is like fiefdom around it, right? And they're all kicking up to the big guy, which is you know how the stadium is and everything. So they need your business, and they're counting on the fact that the demand is going to be there. And I think to a degree, they're off to a great start in that regard.
Here's what I know. The status quo was unacceptable.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, you had the worst stadium in the NFL you have for years. It's a dump of a place that they're trying desperately to improve, and they've worked very hard at it.
Yeah.
Not just them. The previous regime did. The regime before that, even when it was bad around here and Silly Geese ran this whole thing, they had some good people like Lon Rosenberg 10, 12, 15 years ago that were grinding to try to put lipstick on that pig out in Landover. Okay? Here's the problem. It was a stadium that was effectively thrown together by the lowest bidder.
Yep.
And it was privately...
And it looked like it, yeah.
Yeah, and it was privately built by an ownership group that was trying to beat the clock when the patriarch of the family wasn't doing very well, frankly. And what you get is what you have, which is which pipe's leaking today? Who's getting spilled on this time? Where are we going to put the trash can to catch all the leaks? You know, that kind of a stadium that's the same age, by the way, as the Ravens facility, which is still holding up fairly well, pretty strongly. Done differently. And the big problem, I think, with Northwest Stadium is because Bruce Allen and some of these other guys along the way that were so bad at their jobs had their eyes on the prize of different stadiums, they never really upkept the thing.
Yeah,
they treated it like a house they were renting rather than one that they were going to be in forever. And so they kind of said, oh, we're going to have a stadium deal. We're going to be out of here. We're not staying until 2027.
We're not doing $100 million to renovate the lights or the
years away,
speakers.
Man. Yeah. So they just never spent on the upkeep that was necessary. And I think that eventually caught up to them. But now you're going to have a gorgeous new stadium, and it's going to cost money. If you want nice things, you don't get to drive around the coolest car if you don't pay for it. You're going to have the nicest stadium, and yeah, there's going to be some downside, I suppose.
Be some costs.
But I think a lot of people are excited for it, and there's going to be some good opportunities. They got to do what they can to make sure that they don't price people out, for sure. I mean, you need to make sure that it's not some super white collar, you know, only the richest of D.C. can get in there. And I don't know that you can even have a stadium like that in the city with 65,000 seats because they're just, you're not going to be able to fill it. But they need to do what they can to keep some families and, you know, everyone from 100%. All communities getting in there.
Because especially,
that's what RFK Stadium was.
Yes. Especially those that have dealt with, tolerated, and even embraced how terrible the current stadium is.
Yeah.
Like that, I don't know how to do it. I'm not smart enough. I'll tell you that right now. I am out of ideas. I'm kind of doing the thing where I wave at a problem and go, someone should figure that out. But they've got some smart people over there. Okay. The folks that endured all of the visiting fans yelling at them and getting screamed at in their own place and kept filling the season ticket coffers and kept paying the outrageous amounts for beer, the most expensive in the NFL, that are paying the outrageous parking costs for logistical nightmares, for terrible traffic, for the whole nine yards, every bit of the indignity that you suffered. Those folks need to be taken care of. I don't know how to do it because, again, you got to raise money. You need the cash because you're spending a lot. I understand all that, but, you know, don't walk into a room that's hot and be surprised that it's hot. Like, you got to deal with this. I want to make sure that those folks who never quit, because I quit. I was like, I'm never going back there, and I still won't. Those folks that endured it need to be taken care of in some way. Again, I don't know how to do it exactly and keep the other part where you get to make money because you deserve to because you're spending a lot, but I need that happening.
Does Danny Rie go back to a game?
At the new place?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, leaving Northwest Stadium, where you have vowed to never go again, will mm-hmm. you go to the new stadium?
Absolutely.
Regularly?
Probably not. I mean, just life stuff happens, and it's going to be expensive, but I will definitely go.
You'll be back at a game?
Yeah, I will go.
I think there's a lot of people like you.
Yeah.
That have sworn off that stadium. Now, there's also going to be plenty of people maybe that can't afford the new thing either. That's my
totally.
Big fear,
mm-hmm.
and they got to figure that part out. I'm worried about the PSLs probably more than anything, but today's not the day to worry about the things.
Yeah, it's not quite rain day, yeah.
To say... Awesome. There's going to be an NFL stadium in the nation's capital. And so I'm 37. Yeah, I'm 37. I am not old enough to remember, really, RFK Stadium. I know of its existence. I went there. When I think of RFK Stadium, here's what I know. DC United played there. That's where I went to watch DC United as a kid when I used to go to their games playing soccer with my soccer team. The Nats. When they came back to D.C.
And Ryan Church and Brad Wilkerson.
It was a dump.
Yes, it was.
It was Garrett Mock. It was
Matt Chico.
Babyface Ryan Zimmerman. This kid just played at the University of Virginia. Now he's here at this ballpark. It is Elijah Dukes and Lastings Millage and John Patterson. You know, that's what's happening at RFK Stadium.
Yeah.
It's not Charles Mann and Dexter Manley for me at 37 years old. But I did go once. I barely remember anything about the experience because I was probably, I don't know, 6 or 7. The only time I ever went with my father. So if you are older than me, I think you probably have some fond memories. If you're younger than me, I don't think you do. But it doesn't matter. Because if you're like me and you're taking your kids in 5 years, my son will be, God, that's crazy to think about. He'll be 9. And hopefully I take my family to a game in that opening season. And it's just going to be going to the nicest stadium in the NFL and one of the state-of-the-art, most incredible stadiums on the planet when it opens. Downtown in D.C., our home city. It won't matter that it's on the site of RFK Stadium necessarily. If you care about that, though, you get something out of that part of it.
Uh-huh.
If your father or my mom goes, who has been to RFK... Used to be really hard to get tickets, believe it or
not. Yeah, I lifelong fan, only went a couple of times because you couldn't get them.
My mom has been a diehard Redskins fan since, you know, she was born in 57, so since the 60s with her dad. I don't know, I'll have to ask her. I don't think she's been there more than a few times. But if she went, I think it would mean something to her getting off the metro and, you know, walking in there in the same way that her dad used to take her by the hand. So everyone's going to get what they need to out of the experience. But... I just think it's worth stopping and smelling the roses, however you feel about the move, because this is 15 years in the making. Easy.
Yeah.
I mean, the first time we started talking about a future stadium was shortly after Bruce Allen was hired. That's when I remember it.
I was going to bring up.
They brought him in and they kind of said, like, Bruce is here to smooth over and schmooze a little bit with relationships. His brother was a governor, you know. He was a politician who just... happened to pretend to be a general manager, kind of. And so he punted in college that time.
The punter.
For Richmond. I think this he a spider, though. Hashtag Bruce a spider. Anyway, that's a great hashtag.
That bought me. That is a great.
Can we do that?
I forgot about that.
Hashtag Bruce a spider.
The old hashtag.
Yeah, next time Scott Van Pelt says he a terp, just remember, Bruce a spider.
Bruce, he a spider.
Oh, boy. Anyway.
But yeah, that was, remember when he took over.
He's here to build the stadium.
Yeah, so.
That was 2010, by the way.
So Vinny Bumbats finally got kicked out. You know, that was the fall guy for the first part of Snyder's regime. And the appeal of Bruce Allen were all these alleged connections that he had to be able to grease the wheels. Because, as you mentioned, his dad, coach, brother, governor, everything under the sun, he would know everybody and be able to get the thing finally. We were talking about it back then for his ability to potentially get a new stadium. Because 10 years into Nubs Field, everyone already knew, okay, this isn't particularly great. And then that supposedly was progressing, and it never went anywhere. They were worse off than when he started.
McKenzie, last night was a slog. I mean, you pitched really well, 5 2/3 scoreless innings, but it was cold, it was wet, it was windy, there weren't a lot of people in the stands. Kind of a bring-your-own-energy night, huh?
Yeah, I mean, kind of like you said, you know, bring some energy. I mean, it's still a big league game, so there's still, you know, there's a lot on the line, and you're playing a really good lineup, and Chris Sale's pitching, so you have a good idea of what the game's going to be like. But yeah, you know, strange two-hour delay. And raining at the end of the year. So it was kind of weird going in, but it's still a big league game. So you got a lot of adrenaline and, you know, there's some things you have to do. So you pitch well, and I was able to do that for the most part.
On a night where you're pitching like last night, I'm sure the answer is different. So tell us what you were doing during the two-hour delay last night. But on a non-pitch night, what are you doing during a delay of 2 hours? That's a long time.
On a non-pitch night, a whole lot of nothing. Just kind of hanging out, wondering if we're going to play or not. It's kind of what you do. You end up eating a lot, just sitting around. And the rain delays are pretty boring, though. They're pretty boring.
So, but for last night, when did you know there was going to be a delay? And how does that affect your routine? I imagine one of the harder things, kind of underrated, would be getting up, getting ready, and then, nope, hold off. And now we got to ramp that process back up again. When did you know, and how does that affect your routine?
Yeah, you know, there wasn't like a final word or we are going to be in a delay until probably a little after 6. I knew that they needed 45 minutes after they took the tarp off. So I knew I would have some time whenever that was. It's kind of weird because when you start, you're pretty locked in all day and you kind of have to turn it off for a little bit once you've learned that there's going to be an hour or so that you have to wait, just because if you're trying to focus for that long, you'll be exhausted. So you kind of turn it off, stay loose, and then when you have an idea of when the game's going to start, you kind of lock it back in and get ready to go.
You were dealing there pretty much all night on a tough night for all hitters, for both lineups. You guys both, you imagine Chris Sale pitch for pitch. How did you feel when you came out of the game, and you know, did you feel like you could have gone more?
Yeah, I mean, we knew going in that was going to be at 90, just coming off. We went like, 78 last time, mm-hmm. coming off the IL. And so 90 was the number. And so I knew that was probably going to be enough. And I kind of settled in. The rain kind of stopped in, the third inning or so. And I think we both kind of settled in, and I got rolling there after the first. And I felt good. You know, my body's recovered well after taking 2 weeks off, and I think this stuff was probably a little better last night than it was the start before, which was kind of expected. So,
Does that mean in your next start you can be back to 105 pitches, or do you stay at 90 now? What's kind of the timeline?
Yeah, I should be full go next start. I mean, what that ends up being pitch count wise, you know, you never don't really know going in. But I will be full go. There'll be no hard pitch count or anything going into the next one. So,
how does the night where you mentioned it was raining, it was sprinkling on and on throughout, and there were times it was coming down even harder. How does that affect you on the mound in terms of grip and feel and everything? Do you have to tweak anything?
Yeah, when it's wet, you know, it's tough. You know, the mound gets wet. Obviously, everybody has to deal with this, and I do have a long stride, so that's usually interesting to deal with in the rain. So sometimes you got to short the stride a little bit, and then the ball gets wet. But I mean, you can get a new ball pretty easy. So just understanding that it's going to be wet out there, and maybe short the stride a little bit and get the foot down a little earlier, just so we don't slip.
Nats ace left-hander Mackenzie Gore is with us on Grant and Danny. Mac, I know you're not overly involved in monitoring all of this. All right, I get that. But I am just curious, as a guy who's one of the veterans and leaders in the clubhouse, that you guys are ongoing with your GM search right now. They're going to be a new executive running the show potentially this offseason and maybe a new manager. I'm just wondering what you kind of hope the future looks like for this team, and if you have any thoughts going into the offseason here of what this thing could and should look like moving forward in terms of bringing pieces in and getting active again as someone who's a mainstay and an important piece to this whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think everything starts from the top, so I think that's very important going into the offseason. I'm sure, you know, they're going to hire whoever they think the best fit is. As a player, I just want to, you know, get the most out of everybody in the clubhouse, and I think that starts from the front office, and I think that's something we haven't necessarily done the past few years. We've had guys have good years. I'm not saying that. But we just, you know, we haven't won enough games, and it's been frustrating, but we do have some really exciting players, James, CJ, Dylan. You know, Dalen's had a really nice rookie year, and there's other pieces I'm leaving out, but we've got some guys that can play, and we just want to get the most out of this group. I think that's what the best teams do. No matter how much the player's making, they get the most out of that player. And I think that's something we have to figure out how to do here.
Yeah, maximizing potential, right? Like if everyone reaches their ceiling, it's a different looking ball club. Is there something specific? Is that a front office thing or a coaching thing? Like how do you guys actually do that?
I'm not sure what the answer is. I do know that unfortunately we didn't win enough games this year. And a lot of that is on the players. We are the ones out there. But we just got to figure out a way as a group to just be a little better. I wish I knew the answer, but I get paid to try to get people out, not to figure out what that answer is. So, but I do think that's something we need to do as a group, and it's on the players, but I think it's everybody. It's the whole organization. So
how has Sean Doolittle been able to work with you? A guy that, you know, most of the Nats fans remember pitching, it seems like 5-10 minutes ago. Now he's got like a pen in his hat and he's, you know, Mr. Calming Presence on the mound, covering his mouth, letting, you know, no one know what he's saying. What's it like been working with him?
Yeah. Me and Doo kind of built a great relationship. And it's been cool with him too, because he's kind of learning the coaching side as he's, you know, going into this year. He was just, it seemed like he did a great job last year, and he was even better this year. I've really enjoyed working with him. He's helped me a lot. I think he's, you know, a big part of the reason I've been able to make strides and continue to get better. So he's been great to have around, and he's really smart. And I think he's kind of the same way. He's going to continue to get better as a coach, and he seems like he really enjoys it.
Mackenzie Gore, ace of the Nationals on Grant and Danny. Mackenzie, we appreciate it, brother. Finish the season strong and look forward to catching up next week.
All right, will do.
That was the leadoff brought to you by The Window Man. Since 1989, The Window Man's been the educational window company. Get your free in-home estimate or visit thewindowman.com's all-new Fairfax showroom. Big thanks to Mackenzie Gore, presented by Main Street Bank, all season long, every week, right here on Grant and Danny. Cheer local, bank local. Put their team in your office. Visit mstreetbank.com for more information. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, it's your favorite sports talk show in the DMV, the Sports Junkies.
We're talking DC sports and having fun, chopping it up every day on the radio.
You can hear us every morning on 106.7 The Fan. But did you know our show is also a podcast?
You get every episode, every hour, and every single highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
And whenever works for you.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search the Sports Junkies, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.